Go ahead, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today's report is a short update on our progress in producing the Habitat Omnibus Amendment 2 DEIS, as Terry mentioned, for specific approval in November, and at that time the selection of any preferred alternatives. After that November meeting, OA2 will be submitted to NERO for review and then sent out for full public hearing. And we're then projecting April 2014 for the Council review of the public comments and the selection of final alternatives at that time. The Joint Habitat Groundfish Committees met in Portsmouth, New Hampshire on September 5th to refine the spatial management alternatives that have already been approved by the Council for analysis, and they were approved, as we know, at the June Council meeting. And also to address any questions or concerns that may have been raised by the CAT and the PDT in their task of analyzing these for the DEIS alternatives. And what we did was we went through each alternative at the meeting now. We went through each alternative in the order presented in Document 1, allowing the committee to make adjustments as appropriate. So all we need to do today is to go through the five motions that were presented as adjustments to the council, and then we got one further motion dealing with a possible new alternative based on a suggestion in a letter from the regional administrator, which we will present after the motions on existing alternatives. That'll be the last thing that we present. It wasn't an alternative, so we're going to go through the alternatives first. Michelle has a few slides that will illustrate the changes that each of these made. So with that, I'm going to go into the first motion. Motion one was by McKenzie and Dempsey, and it was to move to shift the Jeffries Bank areas into the central Gulf of Maine subregion by making the following adjustments to the alternatives. Can we get those up? Okay.
Dave, before you go too much further, yeah. your intention is to get a committee motion on the board, and then Michelle's going to make a presentation.
Yeah, I think it's one slide for each one to illustrate, and then at that point we'll take comment and go through the motion. Okay. Committee motion was to shift the Jeffries Bank areas into the central Gulf of Maine subregion by making the following adjustments to the alternatives. A, remove status quo Jeffries Bank area from Eastern Gulf Maine Alternative 1, no action, and Eastern Gulf of Maine Alternative 4. B, remove modified Jeffries Bank area from Eastern Gulf of Maine Alternative 3. C, add status quo Jeffries Bank area to Central Gulf of Maine Alternative 1, no action. And D, add modified Jeffries Bank area to Central Gulf of Maine Alternatives 3 and 4. That was a committee motion that carried 9-0 with one abstention.
Committee motion that does not need a second. Take it away, Michelle.
Okay, thanks. Karen's just going to bring up the slides. It's just the second slide, or I guess I could do it. So Dave just read the motion to you. Basically, by way of background, there was when the technical team and the PDT discussed taking these habitat management alternatives in a sort of sub-regional approach, we talked about the fact that Jeffries Bank could be placed in either region. Oceanographically, it's sort of at a splitting off point where there's a current that sort of goes more into the central Gulf of Maine or into the western Gulf of Maine. So you could group it oceanographically with eastern or central Maine. And it's in some ways it's more of an offshore bank ledge feature similar to some of the other areas we have in the central Gulf of Maine. Jeffries Bank ended up in a couple of different subregions in the alternatives that came out of the committee in the spring and then out of the council. So when I drafted the alternatives for the EIS, it wasn't entirely clear to me where Jeffries Bank should be, but it seemed that it shouldn't be in two subregions. So I assigned it to the Eastern Gulf of Maine. And so this motion sort of just clarifies that the committee's intent was to have it analyzed along with the other Central Gulf of Maine alternatives. And what you're going to see in the draft is these alternatives sort of evaluated as packages. So we'll present to you the attributes and the costs and benefits of combining the different alternatives worth of areas. And so basically what will happen is that the attributes associated with Jeffrey's Bank and the species and habitat types that are protected will be folded into these Gulf of Maine or Central Gulf of Maine packages rather than the eastern ones. So the figures I'll show you are what the alternatives would look like if this motion is approved by the council. So the no action alternative for the eastern Gulf of Maine region, I actually don't have a figure for it. It's no habitat management areas. We currently don't have any areas. So this would be alternative. And also alternative two, which for most of the other regions is no habitat management areas. It wouldn't be necessary to have a separate alternative two in eastern Maine because we currently have no management areas for habitat there. This would be alternative two, therefore, in eastern Maine. It would have this larger version of the eastern Maine area and then the Machias area as habitat management areas, and there's a range of measures that could be applied to those as explained in the document one. Alternative two would be the smaller version of the eastern Maine area combined with the Machias and Toothaker Ridge areas. And then in the central Gulf of Maine, this would be no action then because you're shifting that Jeffrey's Bank area into that region. So you've got the Jeffrey's Bank area, Cache's Ledge area, and also the Cache's Ledge groundfish closure. And then alternative two, again, would be no habitat management areas. There's not a figure for that. This would be alternative three, so it includes the modified version of the Jeffrey's Bank area, the modified version of the Cache's Ledge area, the other smaller areas on Platts and Pippinies, and then also some enhanced protections on Almond Rock. And then finally, alternative four for the central Gulf of Maine would be just the modified Jeffrey's Bank, the modified Cache's Ledge, and that Almond Rock enhanced sort of protection area. So those are what the alternatives would look like now if the council approves the motion that passed the committee. So if anyone has questions, I'm happy to try and answer them.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. Questions for Michelle? Frank, do you have your hand up? Mike?
Yes, thank you, Michelle. Just being new to all of this detail, I'm really trying to get a sense of whether what the motion is essentially reassigns various habitat to different categories or whether there's actually a substantive change in the amount of habitat that might potentially be protected.
Yeah, it's really just a matter of reassigning it. I mean, I think depending on how the council chooses, we're going to analyze these packages of areas. After the council sees the draft analyses and gets the comments from the public hearings, they may adjust some of the packages. So ultimately it may change, but the areas being analyzed regardless, it's just a matter of where it fits.
Okay, so I think the answer is that ultimately the council will decide, and we don't know what will end up receiving protection, but nothing is being taken out of the areas that would be analyzed and potentially protected.
Yeah, that's correct.
So thank you.
Other council questions? Any questions from the audience? Back to the council. Okay. This is going too easy. those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. It's unanimous, 17-0-0. Dave, you're up again.
Okay, motion number two. Oh, okay. It's the Alexander Kendall include an additional alternative for the Western Gulf of Maine region that is comprised of the Stellwagen large habitat management area only.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Michelle.
Thanks. So Basically, the committee discussed a couple different options here. One was to substitute an existing alternative with this alternative, so removing some of the other areas and just implementing only the Stellweg and large area as the habitat management area and the alternative. Ultimately, the motion that passed the committee was to create this as an additional alternative. And we sort of discussed as well at the committee the idea that as much as we can, it seems important for the council to include the alternatives for analysis now that in packaged in ways that might ultimately be approved, because we want to analyze as many of the alternative packages as possible for November, so we don't need to do additional reanalysis and lots of updates to the draft later. So I think if it's possible that the council would approve just the Stellwagen area as the habitat management area, then it makes sense to include this as an alternative to be analyzed as a sort of standalone. There is that in the PowerPoint, Karen, there's a chart of this if people want to see what it would look like. So there's just the Stellwagen large area. This is the same boundaries as the dedicated habitat research area, but the measures for this area as a habitat management area would just be related to mobile gears, so either restricting mobile gears with an exemption for clam dredges, or those trawl modification requirements to the ground cables.
Thank you, Michelle. Questions from the council? Any questions from the audience? Back to the council. Dave?
Yeah, this one passed the committee 6-2 with two abstentions.
Last call. Mike?
Again, just looking for clarification. So this is a new alternative, but it's actually a subset of alternatives that already exist.
Yeah,
so in the context of workload, I'm sure it's some additional words to paper, but it's still dealing with areas that were to be analyzed anyway. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any final questions or comments? Seeing none, to the motion on the board, those who support it, please indicate so. Hands up, please. Those who don't, and those who are abstaining. The motion carries 15-1-1. Dave.
Okay, motion number three was proposed by Griffin and seconded by McKenzie. Adjust the current rolling closure in blocks 124 and 125 to move to include as part of the alternative two spawning protection areas a southwestern Massachusetts Bay cod spawning closure area bounded to the north, south, and west by the Massachusetts State Waters line and to the east by a straight line connecting the following points in order and the points around the figure. And this closed area would apply from November to January with the same gear prohibitions and exemptions as the existing whaleback cod spawning closure area. And that one, actually, let me revise that. There was a perfection. Essentially the same. And that motion three is perfected, carried on a show of hands, 5-4 with one abstention.
Committee motion does not need a second. Michelle?
Thanks. So there's the figure in your document reflects this, and also once Karen gets settled and can put up the slide. Basically, in this general region, the larger blocks 124 and 125 are currently rolling closures for the common pool. They used to apply more broadly. When the closed area technical team made some recommendations for spawning protection areas, they included some areas that sort of overlapped and were in this general region and were also in the fall into the winter. The council didn't accept that recommendation at the time and just wanted to modify the existing rolling closures. We had a series of informational meetings over the summer. The report is in your binder, and Hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at that. We got comments from a couple different sources about cod spawning in this general region later in the year, in the fall and the winter. The closed area technical team and the PDT, when we met to discuss the outcomes of those informational meetings, reviewed that information and felt that one way to protect those spawning cod was to go back and maintain the existing fall spawning rolling closure in blocks 124 and 125 and apply it to a broader array of vessels in which it currently applies to. So there's been this existing no action measure. There's been discussion at the CAT. There's been recommendations that came out at the end of the summer from the technical teams, the informational meetings, and then this motion was provided to the committee, which is basically a refinement of areas 124 and 125. It overlaps both. The way this measure would be evaluated is as part of the action alternative for spawning in the Gulf of Maine. So essentially your spawning alternative 2 in the Gulf of Maine is going to include this area in November, December, and January with the same measures as currently apply in the whaleback area or the Gulf of Maine cod spawning protection area. And then in the spring, you'd have the rolling closures in April, May, and June, and those would apply pretty broadly, and you'd also maintain that Gulf of Maine cod spawning protection area, the whaleback area, as well. So that would be your action alternative for spawning in the Gulf of Maine, and this area would just be folded into that analysis and included there. And the coordinates are shown in the document and then the figure is right there.
Thank you, Michelle. Questions for Michelle? Questions from the audience? Back to the council. Okay, seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion passes. It's unanimous, 17-0-0. Dave.
Okay, fourth motion was proposed by Alexander, seconded by Ramston, to remove the May Georges Bank seasonal closure area from Georges Bank spawning alternative 2, and it carried 7-1 with one abstention.
Michelle.
So the currently this May area applies basically to the common pool vessels. There's a number of different exemptions to it. And so right now this area probably doesn't provide a whole lot of protection for spawning because there's sort of a limited number of different groundfish vessels that are excluded from the area. So what the staff sort of discussed with the committee was that there's a couple of different, you know, ways to go with this here. You could either keep this area in your spawning action alternative and continue to have it just apply to a few vessels. Or you could keep this area in your spawning action alternative and have it apply more broadly to a range of vessels that are targeting groundfish to protect groundfish spawning activity. Or the alternative, which reflects the committee motion, you could just remove this May area from the spawning action alternative and not have it go forward. And so the way that this the implication of this motion is that this May seasonal closure would then be removed from the regulations and no longer used at all. So basically what remains in the action alternative for spawning on Georges Bank would be closed area 2 and closed area 1 implemented in February, March, and April.
Thank you, Michelle. Questions for Michelle? Questions from the audience? Back to the council. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little concerned about this. I understand that it may have minimal impact, but given how thin we are on spawning protections in this amendment already, I'm wondering if it's wise for us to remove any at this point. That's my only concern about this. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
I do support the motion. However, I want to call the council's attention to some of the text that goes along with this particular motion. On page 61, the summary of the meeting, where it's highlighted by a member of the audience, and I'll highlight it as well, that in light of the workshop that we had not too long ago about Gulf of Maine cod structure, stock structure, this area, much of it very well, could be an area that could be termed Gulf of Maine cod spawning. I'm hopeful that eventually we'll be able to address the boundaries relative to where Gulf of Maine cod actually are found. I realize it's a real difficult nut to crack. Our executive director, Tom Neese, did at one time provide this council with a summary of everything that would have to be done if we were to aggressively and appropriately deal with the results of that workshop and where the boundaries for Gulf of Maine cod should actually be drawn. So it's an issue that still is alive. We can't address it in this amendment, of course, but it's something we need to continue to think about as we move forward with continuing concern about Gulf of Maine cod stock rebuilding, hitting the targets, all of that. So, again, I support the motion, but let's not forget that the question of where Gulf of Maine cod reside or seasonally can be found is still very relevant.
Terry.
And I get Dave's points, but in May, where there's absolutely no spawning protection out there because the fish aren't spawning in May, as far as we know, it's March and April. So, I mean, I think it's only relevant to just a few boats. So, as it sits right now, you know, of course, that doesn't mean we're not going to take that up in another groundfish action. So.
Further comments? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? The motion carries 16-1-0. Dave.
Okay, the next one is motion 5, and this is the last of the motions that dealt with modifications in existing alternatives. And this is motion 7 in the report, and motion 5 here today. McKenzie and Ramston seconded it. To remove sub-option 2 from 9.3.3 CIRA-DHRA section to correct the record and better reflect the June 2013 document approved by the council. This motion carried on a show of hands at 6-0, 2 abstentions.
Committee motion that does not need a second. Michelle?
Thanks. So I think maybe this motion actually corrects something that I did. We had originally discussed the research area having no action measures throughout, and then later on we added a discussion of including a reference area that would additionally restrict recreational ground fishing from just the southern portion of the research area. It's basically a 5 nautical mile by 10 nautical mile rectangle that makes up the southern part of the research area as a whole. And so the way that this measure had originally been written up in some documents that you saw in the spring was to implement the DHRA for the region, include no action measures throughout that includes restrictions on commercial gears that catch groundfish and also mobile bottom tending gears, which is associated with the area's status as a habitat closure. And then in addition, close this reference area to recreational ground fishing. When I wrote up the alternatives over the summer, I actually sort of exploded that out into two different sub-options where the council could select to implement the research area with no action measures throughout, or the council could select to implement the research area and include the reference area that would be closed to recreational ground fishing. It was pointed out at the committee meeting that writing of it with the two sort of sub-options was not consistent with the document that the council saw in June, and it seemed to make more sense just to write that alternative up as just a single alternative, the research area with the reference area, and have it be analyzed that way. Obviously, this doesn't preclude the council adjusting that alternative later, but just that we would analyze it in that way in the EIS. So this is sort of just a restructuring of the alternatives, not removing or adjusting a potential measure or an area.
Yeah, thanks for the explanatory. Questions for Michelle? Tom?
Well, I just want to make a comment that there was a recent meeting with the Stillwagon Bank Charter Boat Operators Association. You have a brief summary of that meeting, and I would point out just for the record that they are opposed to this area being closed to party charter fishing in the reference area.
Thank you, Tom. Other council comments? Comments from the audience? Back to the council. Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so.
17-0, right?
Yes. Motion carries 17-0-0. Dave, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last motion was not based upon any current alternative. It was made in response to a letter that you have in your packet under, number 5C from the regional administrator. And the money line in here is as follows. The amendment needs to balance the protection of critical vulnerable habitat with the economic considerations of the council's fisheries. I am concerned, however, that the alternatives that are currently under consideration for the northern edge area of Georges Bank may not have that optimal balance. The alternatives currently under consideration may be too limited to provide the council with the opportunity to choose a more balanced approach. I believe that there may be better options that would, to quote a Habitat Committee motion from March 19, 2013, provide a more narrowly focused habitat management area that allows for increased scallop fishing in this region while protecting regional cobble and boulder habitats from adverse impacts than the current alternatives. And then on the second page of the letter, there's a map of the proposed habitat management area that we received from NERO. That letter was received on August 30th. And in response to that letter and the perhaps possibility that we didn't have a wide enough range of alternatives, the following motion was placed before the committee. And that is that the committee direct council staff, this was, by the way, by Grout and seconded by Griffin, that the committee direct council staff to refine the boundaries of the habitat management area identified in the August 30th, 2013 correspondence from NERO. Modifications to the area should attempt to provide additional access to the sea scallop resource while protecting habitats vulnerable to fishing gear that are used by juvenile groundfish, including cod and haddock. There was considerable discussion over this. And part of the discussion centered around the possibility that we did not have an adequate range of alternatives. So there's been some analysis of this done by the PDT and by the closed area technical team, and that's what we have here today. If we're going to follow through on this, the council will have to propose and create an amendment. There is none in this motion. This motion is simply to get some feedback from the PDT on what they can come up with as compared with the proposal from NERO. So with that, I'll turn it over to Michelle.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Michelle?
Right. Karen, can you put the slides up, please? Yeah, the committee motion really tasks the staff to do some work. And so I'm just going to you should have gotten sort of a memo from the staff yesterday that has some of these same figures, and I basically boiled the results of that memo down into a few slides. And so that's what I'll show you. Yeah. So basically what we're trying to do in this amendment is minimize the adverse effects of fishing on EFH to the extent practicable. And sort of you can read into that as we should be developing habitat conservation measures considering economic and social issues. We've had a lot of difficulty developing the right measure for this area, I think. There's a lot of resources that overlap, a lot of different interests and considerations to take account for. And so the regional administrator and his staff sort of discussed this, and he sent us some correspondence, as David mentioned, communicating his concerns that we don't have currently in the document as approved by the council in June what he would consider to be a practicable alternative for this region. And so their staff had put together a suggestion, and the committee discussed that. And then ultimately what came out of the committee meeting was this motion, where they directed the council staff, and the direction was to the staff given for a couple of reasons. One was just the timing of that we were – the committee met on the 5th of September, and we wanted to have something before the council at this meeting. So we really didn't have time to send it back again to the PDT and the technical team, given the schedule of those meetings. And also because the PDT and the technical team have wrestled with this a lot and had some opportunities to come up with some additional work and really hadn't done anything additional with that at our recent larger technical meetings. So this is something that the staff worked on. We did talk about it at some technical meetings last week. We didn't make any adjustments to the area at either the closed area technical team groundfish meeting or at the habitat plan development team meeting. We did get some comments from those groups about how to present this information, some sort of questions generally about, you know, where the council is going with some of these things. But this is a staff alternative. So the committee motion indicated that modifications to the area should attempt to provide additional access to the sea scallop resource in particular, while protecting habitats vulnerable to fishing gear that are used by juvenile groundfish, and that includes in this region cod and haddock. So basically, this, if the council were to pass a motion to adopt this staff alternative in some form, it would be alternative 6 for the Georges Bank subregion, so it would be an additional alternative, not a substitute or something like that. So the way the alternative would work is it would remove the existing habitat closure areas on Georges Bank, and so that would be closed area 1 and closed area 2. It would also remove the closed area 1 and 2 groundfish closures as year-round habitat protection measures. They could, under your spawning alternatives, remain in place either year-round or seasonally for spawning. And it would establish this northern edge habitat management area. Now, this is different from the one that's discussed in alternative 3 and 4 for Georges Bank, so it's called version 2 on a lot of the charts. And the measure would be that it would be closed to mobile bottom tending gears on a year-round basis. And fishing would be allowed in this central area. So this is basically sort of a donut-shaped area where there's habitat protections outside of the larger boundaries. The fishing is allowed, and then within this sort of central part of the area, fishing is also allowed. And so this figure, hopefully, it's sort of clear enough to see, but you can basically see how all the different management areas, well, some subset of the management areas we've talked about, and the ones that are currently in the document overlay. Is this a pointer? No. So the sort of stippled shaded area with the cutout in the middle, that's what this alternative would be. And so the mobile gear closure would be in that sort of gray shaded area. The blue area that's sort of angled would be, that's the alternative 3 area that's currently in the document for analysis. And it's either in the document as a standalone area, so it constitutes the entire alternative, or it's combined with a gear modification area further west and south on Georgia Shoal. You can see the outlines of the current closed area 2 habitat closure area. Thank you, Andy. In red, it's a sort of L-shaped area. This is the area that currently exists. And as a mobile gear closure. And then this upper hatched area is the area that was proposed to the committee by the regional office. And it basically sort of cuts off this bottom part of the alternative 3 area with the goal of providing additional access while still protecting some habitat, particularly some of these sort of deeper water areas where we have some of the clusters, hotspots of in particular juvenile haddock. This didn't come through very well, sorry. But you can see maybe this is just the management alternative, and so this sort of shaded area is the area that would be closed, and then this interior area would be access to fishing would be allowed. So there's kind of a few different things the council could do with this today. If you want to include this alternative as is in the draft EIS, which we're trying to get together for November, I hope, you would need to adopt this alternative for analysis by some kind of a motion today. if you don't like this option, and but you still, you know, you feel that the options in the document are not an adequate range or don't do what you want them to do, we're probably going to need to think about extending the timeline because we're just going to need, right now we're sort of pressing forward with analyzing these areas and just trying to write the document. And so taking a step back, developing something additional and you know, kind of putting the rest of the EIS writing on hold is going to take some additional time, and I don't think we can make November if we do that. But we can do that if that's what the council, the will of the council, obviously. If you don't want to include this and you feel like the range of alternatives in the document is adequate, then don't do anything. Certainly, whatever the outcome today, and I think I mentioned this earlier, you know, once we write the draft and you see it in November, you can select preferred alternatives in November, and we hope you will, at least speaking for the technical teams. After public comments, the council may very well, you know, make adjustments to some of these areas. You know, depending on the extent of those adjustments and the ways that things are repackaged, we're going to have to do more or less additional analysis for the final EIS or for the draft of the EIS that you'd see in April as well. So just to, I've got a number of figures that hopefully can get at what some of the rationale is, but basically what we were trying to do here is encompass areas that are cobble dominated and also an area in particular that has unusually abundant epifauna that's been shown in some USGS work, also in the HABCAM work, and that's outlined on the next figure, as well as the areas where you find juvenile groundfish and particularly these haddock hotspots, and just in general catch of those groundfish, not necessarily at these higher aggregated hotspot levels. We discussed the area as a mobile bottom tending gear closure rather than as a trawl gear modified area because the whole area was designed around protecting essential areas while allowing access to aggregations of scallops in particular. You know, we recognize that this boundary is pretty irregular, and we've heard some concerns about enforcement and that kind of thing. But given the just distribution of cobble habitats and groundfish and scallops in this area, it's very patchy and irregular distribution, and it's really hard. And I think this is why we've struggled throughout the process, the technical teams have, to come up with the right alternative because these distributions are just very irregular and sort of interleaving. And so it's an irregular boundary for that reason. So here's some of the data that we looked at. So this figure shows eudominant sediment. This is very similar data sources as to what went into the swept area seabed impact model, but this is actually the way it's represented in Harris and Stokesbury's 2011, I believe, sediment classification paper. And I like this representation because all of the grids are sort of an even distribution, whereas the SASE grid, you end up with smaller grids in areas we have more sampling, larger grids in areas where we have less sampling, and this is a little easier to look at, I find. And so really these marginal areas are classified as sand. You're up in this region, you're really sort of operating in a matrix of granule pebble, and the memo describes the size classes associated with that, but fairly fine gravels. And then the browner colors and also some of these redder browns, there's not very much of that, but these larger brown patches are cobble, and so more fist-sized grain sizes, and those are what tend to have the epifauna associated with them that we're concerned about from a providing structure for juvenile fish and from sort of an impacts from mobile gears type of perspective. And so one of the things this area does is it tries to encompass these aggregations of cobble, and it avoids some of these more gravelly areas, which have more scallops in them. So this is a 2013 representation of scallop biomass. These data were collected using HABCAM and evaluated by the Science Center. And so I have a couple different figures that show this in a couple different ways. I think Andy and I have discussed this with you before, but there's, you know, depending on how you sort the breaks you choose, your map can look a little bit different. And so, you know, the highest concentrations, you know, I'm not being very clear here. I'll show you the two figures, and hopefully it'll be easier to see. But basically what this map is showing you is that the redder areas are more scallops, the bluer areas are fewer scallops. And this is a percentile distribution. So the very reddest grids comprise the top 10% of the biomass, whereas the very bluest grids, so this color that's most of it, is the lowest 10% of the biomass. And the fact that you have so many more blue grids than red grids basically just indicates to you that the distribution is very, very patchy in this region, which you all already know. This is another representation of these same data, just binned in a different way. And this is a natural breaks binning. And so it's sort of, you still get these same concentrations here and then also here, and the low concentrations out here, but these aggregations are a bit more blown out. So just kind of. Ultimately, when we do the analysis in the EIS, we won't be focusing so much on visual interpretations of these data. We'll be actually looking at what's the biomass that we think is enclosed by different areas or, you know, allowed access to by other areas. And so that's, we would do it on a numbers basis rather than just visually, so you have a clear indication of what's in the different areas. Also, just wanted for a bit of context to provide a couple of figures on what has biomass looked like historically, because, you know, currently biomass is distributed really with respect. You can very clearly see the outline of the existing habitat closure, and it's sort of, and especially with this visualization, there's basically a break here where you have lots of scallops enclosed within the management area, and you have fewer out here to the west because this is an area that's currently and persistently fished. You know, year in and year out, there are trips that fish in this area. So what did it used to look like? Well, I was kind of surprised to see that pre-closure, there were, and probably you guys aren't surprised to see that, there were very few scallops at all. There, you know, a lot of zero toes, and the distribution was very, very patchy in this region. This is a longer time series, basically most of the years that have been surveyed by the scallop dredge survey, and this is just weight per toe, all scallops combined, just kind of a gross kind of coarse measure of where the scallops are distributed over basically 1982 to 2012. So I guess that's, what, 30 years. So you do, you know, see scallops throughout this region. You know, some of these larger toes probably are more recent. But in any case, some of the larger toes do, you know, occur within this area, but you do have scallops out here to the west, and this is proposed as part of the management area, so it's something to think about, I guess. So those are the scallop distributions. This figure shows you the groundfish distributions, and in the green are the haddock catches, and in the orange are the cod catches. There's probably a better way to display this because all of these are the same toe is catching both haddock and cod, so there's some overlap, and it may be a little bit hard to see. And then some of these, they're blue dots throughout here, basically up in here, and then there's a couple down here. These are haddock hotspots, and so hopefully you can recall back a few months to Andy's description of the hotspot analysis that Kat did. But basically what it means for something to be a hotspot is that it was a unusually high toe relative to haddock toes throughout the entire region, all of Georges Bank and all of the Gulf of Maine. And also there's other relatively high toes in proximity, so it's a cluster of high catches. And these data are all from 2002 to 2012. So the catch data are from there, and then the hotspots use that same 10 years of data. And so you can see that, you know, the hotspots in general are clustered a bit north and outside of this area that would be open. The, you know, catches of cod and haddock in general are sort of along the edge of the bank, and you see that extended out into Canadian waters on the Northeast Peak as well, if you were to zoom out the map. Which this does, and these are basically hotspots from different surveys. The CAT looked at, with the hotspot analysis, a number of different, basically every fishery independent survey that they could, and these were all the ones that were sort of positive for hotspots in this general region. And so, actually, see if you could read that. That would be better. So the lightest color, there's only really a couple areas where you see juvenile cod hotspots, and those are from the spring trawl survey, and those are up here on the Canadian side of the Northeast Peak, right in this area. you do get more juvenile cod hotspots in the summer survey, the NIMS dredge survey, and so these are all these purple dots that kind of go around the edge of the bank. None of those are in U.S. waters. As far as haddock goes, these lighter colored sort of aqua hotspots are from the spring trawl survey, and those are basically all sort of along the southeast parts, and then there's one up here outside the management area and also in Canadian waters. And then you've got also haddock hotspots that come out of the dredge survey. But really the only ones that fall within this possible management area are these fall hotspots for juvenile haddock. And by juvenile, I think we mean like 35 centimeters and smaller or something like that. The size range is similar for the two stocks. So that's sort of the groundfish distributions relative to these areas. So those are the figures I have. I'm happy, and Deirdre and Andy are here, and we can talk about anything you want to with regards to the discussions that we had or some of the data that we have available to look at this. So that's basically it for now.
Thank you, Michelle, for a full explanatory. John, then Dave.
I think Tom's given me a mic, so to ensure that I won't talk during this meeting. I'm on to you, Tom. Thanks, Michelle, very much. You listed the options that the council has to deal with this. Missing from your list of options was that one of the things the council might do is consider the proposal we put in front of you. Our goal, as the committee's goal, was to try and figure out how we might balance the needs of access by the scallop industry to a resource of scallops with protection of habitat. I think that's the goal we're all trying to share. And so let me just make a few comments on why we put forth what we did. And the phrase you used, which is we're aware of a few enforcement issues, but for a few enforcement issues. The proposal that the groundfish committee had here, but for a few enforcement issues, I'll let Captain DeCola address that more, but it looks okay on paper. It makes an awful lot of sense, but you have an open area inside of a closed area, and the open area looks like kind of a lobster claw. I've been looking at it and trying to understand it, and I just have nightmares trying to think about how this would work. But again, Captain DeCola can talk about this. What we were trying to do is put forth something that was simple, and perhaps the boundaries can be argued about how you go about drawing the boundaries to balance access to a rich scallop resource and protecting the most valuable habitat. I'm sure Drew and I could go back and forth ad nauseum about where you draw that line. But what we were trying to do is draw it in a way that was simple, straight, so that it could be enforced, and so that you didn't have people traversing a closed area to get to an open area, or maybe traversing two or three boundaries, and that it would be it would be simple and enforceable. And so that was why we put forth the proposal we did, to make available a scallop resource while protecting valuable habitat, but to do it in a way that was simple and therefore enforceable. And while the lobster claw proposal, or however you want to do it, describe it, makes sense as you look at it, because it really does segregate out the rich scallop resource. It is very hard for me to see how you would go about making available that open area inside a closed area, and an open area that is as irregularly shaped as that one is. I don't want to take more time developing a proposal that's 9 years in the making. I hope we can find a way to keep this moving along, but gaining access to this scallop resource is really important for us to do. So I hope there's a way we can get this alternative figured out in a way that doesn't cost us time.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I think that the situation is relatively straightforward. There are three possible courses that the council can take here, and no action, do nothing at all, means that none of this moves forward. And that, frankly, would give us the highest probability of being ready for November. The second option is to run with the NERO or the PDT cap proposal. We're still in pretty good shape for November with that, because they have had a chance to look at this. And I would say one or the other would be the way to go. The third thing would be if somebody comes up with something entirely new, in which case November's off the table. So that's what it boils down to, basically. And what we would need would be some kind of a motion from the council to take any of these actions. And that's what we'd be looking for now.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share the service's concerns about that box, but for different reasons. Michelle's data show that CPUE has fluctuated dramatically under a fishing regime in that area, and so the argument that access to that area minimizes bottom contact by gear while optimizing CPUE may be true at first, but over the long run, it's not going to be sustained. The industry's job is to remove scallop biomass. That's what they're there to do. I don't want to get in the way of that. But ultimately, what we see now, if we open it up in terms of available material, is not a long-term vision. This is a snapshot that will change very quickly over time. We have not even begun to consider the effect of that type of fishing on that stock and its effect upon spawning and larval distribution throughout Georgia's Bank. And that's something I mentioned this at the committee. We just didn't take it up. So we haven't looked at it in that regard. But I also think we need to step back and take a look at what we're doing to protections on Georgia's Bank. We are proposing a dramatic reduction in area protected. This proposal here has not gone through PDT review in any formal way. It's not derived from the Lisa Sassy analysis that we have put forward that undergird most of our other proposals. It is merely an attempt to try to not manage an ecosystem, but I would argue engineer an ecosystem. And while I understand the Scylla and Charybdis of both ensuring habitat management while guaranteeing access, I'd be very interested to see what the potential revenues off of that particular piece of bottom represent in terms of a fraction of their overall industry revenues. So I have a lot of concerns about this. Michelle, I sent you a motion that I think may get us past this, and I'd like to put it forward to today in response to Chairman Preble's request for a new idea. Did you get that, Michelle, the motion? I emailed it to you earlier this morning. I apologize.
Yeah, we've got a committee motion on the board right now.
My mistake, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion after this one's been dismissed.
So let's keep going around the horn. Terry, then Laura, and Tom.
So, Michelle, at the PDT, did you guys discuss, instead of leaving that area open, the odd-shaped area open, maybe access area trips? Was there any discussion of that? Or, I know we have irregular areas all the time that we have access area openings in, and we seem to be able to manage that all right, so.
So the staff discussed that issue when we talked about the area. I think one obvious, perhaps obvious conclusion is doing rotational access for sea scallops. We weren't really sure how to handle the area with regards to other fisheries beyond sea scallops. There's, you know, probably some additional options in terms of, you know, limiting the number of trips or the number of vessels that are in there at a certain time. You know, we really didn't do a thorough discussion of how you might access that interior area. It did come up a bit when the Habitat PDT discussed this. I can't remember if the issue came up at the CAT as well. You know, we didn't really have any conclusions as to the best or the way that it should be accessed. You know, we definitely discussed the concerns that Administrator Buller raised about the enforceability and the, you know, having a area that's access to fishing within a habitat management area, but we definitely don't have all the answers on how that would work at this point.
Well, I share those concerns, but, you know, I mean, we're talking about a small piece with a lot of money's worth of limited fishing in, you know, if it turned out to be an access area. But in the juvenile areas that you were talking about, that was just the fall. Is that when the juvenile haddock were on the northern edge here?
Sorry, I'm trying to figure something else out. Can you repeat your question?
Yeah, the juvenile area, juvenile haddock that you were talking about, mm-hmm. on the northern edge, is that was just in the fall of the year, or was that year-round?
We do see haddock in that area in many seasons. They're caught in various surveys. The only season in which you have hot spots of haddock, so the very highest catches nearby to other high catches, was in the fall from the trawl survey. And those catches would be included in either the staff proposal or the regional office proposal or in alternative 3 that's already in the document.
Cut more.
Yeah, so when we were at the TMGC in Halifax, I was talking to one of the fellows there, and he was showing me his plots that they use to catch haddock along that edge. And they're mopping right back and forth, north to south, along that Canadian line. And, you know, my concern is we're talking about losing access for our boats and just feeding the other side, and most of the vulnerable habitats on the northeast of our area. So that's my concerns with the whole thing. So,
Laura.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's interesting when people look at documents or slides how they see things differently. So where Matt saw one thing when he was looking at it, I saw, oh, my goodness, this is the reason we need sunset clauses and look at the wastefulness. And then being an industry member and hearing about all of the grayed out huge scallops that are being seen and how they are not marketable unless you add chemicals to them, it is really unfortunate. And I think that the scallop managers, at least in my short time here, have demonstrated a real responsibility to not go in and overfish areas and, in fact, have voted for reductions in areas that where they're having issues with CPUE. So I would feel very confident allowing them, whether it's through special access and not during fall when juvenile spawning is going on, but to continue to let that area be closed and let that waste go on would really, in my opinion, be wrong, and certainly not for the greater good of the nation that we just heard people give an oath to. Thank you.
Tom.
Thanks. I think all of us have probably taken a harder look at this area following the agency's letter on the range of alternatives. And I do think, you know, given that we're not at final action today, what we are talking about is, do we have an adequate range? And I think the signal from the agency is that in many of these sub-areas of New England's waters, we do, and that they flagged this one specifically that that we should take some extra time and consider whether we have a full range. And as I looked at these alternatives, I was actually struck at what the agency came back with and what remains in my mind to consider including. if we're going to, with a straight face, say we have a range of alternatives from a habitat management standpoint out in eastern Georgia. And as I look at the alternatives for this area, we have an alternative with no habitat management areas. We have an alternative with gear restrictions, and we have a couple alternatives with pretty minimal habitat, protected areas. I mean, pretty small. And now we're really discussing something pretty close to that range. What I don't see are any of the blocks that were driven by our SASE analysis, the tool that we took 7 years to create. I think we had PDT developed sort of east and west blocks at some point, and I recognize that those blocks give people heartburn, but I guess I didn't think that they were completely taken out of this document. And as I read the agency's letter about the range of alternatives out in this area, what struck me is that they weren't highlighting that we don't have any SASE-driven management alternatives, and we're not taking the same approach in this area that we have in many of our others. So maybe the service wants to speak to that, but I'm concerned that we don't have the range of alternatives. I think I share that concern with the agency, but I don't think this motion alone addresses that. I think we need to consider whether we should add in those, or add back those PDT-developed alternatives that came out of the SASE analysis. I think it's going to be hard to explain why we took 7 years to develop a tool and then didn't really fully consider the outputs of that tool. So maybe the service would like to respond to that. If it's their intent that with passing this motion and including this alternative, that the range of alternatives out in this area is comprehensive and adequate. In my view, I'm not sure we're there yet.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In general, I have a lot of issues with the alternative, but I guess the primary one is the process. We spent so much time on this process, and for the past year and a half, we've been having a discussion about what can we do to move this amendment for a year and a half at a minimum. And then I thought in June, we said, okay, these are all our alternatives. Let the PDT do their work. They should be doing analysis. And here we are in September contemplating adding something to the document that would extend the timeline. And it's just, it's truly unbelievable that we would be having this conversation. I understand the concerns that have been expressed, and Tom just suggested that we go back to square one on Georgia's Bank. And if we had all the time in the world, maybe that would be the right thing to do, because the current alternative, proposed by the agency was reviewed briefly at the Scallop AP meeting last week, and they didn't agree with the underlying data that was used in Figure 4. We had the, a non-federal HATCAM scientist present at the meeting. She did not believe with the underlying data that was presented in Figure 4. I think there are a lot of issues with the alternative, but before we get to the point where we want to argue about what's wrong with the alternative, what about the process? I mean, I think it's pretty clear adding an alternative like this at this particular stage is going to change the timeline. And to have talked about trying to move the timeline for a year and a half and to be having that conversation, in September of 2013 is truly unbelievable to me. And I would recommend that the council not take action on this. And if people think it's an issue, under priorities, start another habitat amendment. But we have to say stop at some point, and I think we should say stop today. But this motion, I'm not sure really what this motion does. It seemed to, give direction to the staff, but the wording, it's a little unclear. If somebody wants to just tell me what we're supposed to do with this motion, I think it would be helpful.
Tom.
I'd like, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address Mary Beth's question on the motion, because the staff here, I think, were a little confused, too. The motion that came out of the committee was actually direction to the PDT to do something, which they have done. And so it's not clear to me how this motion that has been presented as a committee motion really fits with that or tells the council to do anything. I mean, it seems like there may be more appropriate language that's for motions, such as, to adopt Nero's approach, to not do anything, to adopt what came out of the staff as an approach, rather than a motion to refine the boundaries, particularly unless the council thinks that we want to do further work on refining the boundaries going forward. So it might be worth talking a little bit about motion language, because maybe we don't actually have a motion on the floor that is what the council wants to deal with this right now.
Bunch of hands up. Mike?
Yeah, one quick thing, going back to conversation a little while ago where people were raising issues about the seasonality of where the juvenile hotspots are. I don't think we should be focusing on that in particular, because I think this is really about protecting habitat from mobile gear, which would alter habitat and therefore impact the resources regardless of the seasonality. In fact, I've actually been struck by the whole discussion about this habitat amendment, how much of it focuses on concentrations of fish rather than vulnerability of habitat. And I think in this particular case, when we're talking about the northern edge, the real issue is the vulnerability of habitat that we know is altered substantially by mobile gear. I'm not as convinced as some of my scientific colleagues about the connection between that habitat and actual fish productivity, but there's certainly a case to be made that this is of the habitat we could identify the most important. And frankly, it's a poster child in the community for habitat in New England that people view as important to protect. So I have sympathy with the motion in the sense of taking some action to give greater protection to the northern edge. I actually view this decision as a two-part decision. Maybe this motion's only the first part of it, and that is, do we decide to add an alternative that gives more protection to the northern edge? The second part of it is, do we select from an option that's on the table right now and move forward expediently, or do we accept that once we've decided to do something more for the northern edge, it simply means there has to be more time taken to do the thorough analysis and consider all the alternatives all of the options that might form that new alternative. My bottom line is, I think there is good reason to consider a further alternative for protection along the northern edge. This motion basically says that's what we would be doing, but I think we would then have to make probably the harder decision in my mind is whether we accept one that's already available to us or accept that we would have to take more time. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I think that John's arguments made in the letter to the to you, Mr. Chairman, are good arguments. John and his staff note that the alternative they offer up is smaller in area than the current alternatives. I'd like to make a motion to substitute, and that would be that we include for analyses the NERO proposed habitat management area on the northern edge of Georgia's Bank.
Motion made by Dr. Pierce and seconded by John Bullard. Mary Beth.
So I guess I just would ask Michelle to again comment on what this does to the timeline.
So the closed area technical team and the PDT are geared up to either analyze what's currently in the document, analyze the NERO proposal, or analyze the staff proposal. And to the extent that we can complete all of that analysis by November, I mean, obviously any additional alternative is additional work and writing, but, you know, I'm hopeful that selecting either of those alternatives, we could still have you a document for November. In particular, the NERO area is a subset of an area that we're already analyzing anyway, so I think it might even be a little more straightforward to include that area in the analysis than what the staff had developed. You know, I remain a little bit concerned about the November deadline, but, you know, we're working as hard as we can to get you a document for then. So I don't see this as a huge problem. I think what would be a huge problem is going back to the drawing board and taking more staff time to develop an additional boundary that we don't have before us today.
Okay, Provo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has been a very, very enlightening conversation, and a lot has come out here. First of all, Mike Sissonwine is exactly right. This the motion as it was placed on the board was not complete. Basically what it did was it said, are we going to do anything at all or are we going to not do anything? And then at that point, it would have required another motion to determine whether we're going to make a new alternative. If we're going to make the November timeline, we have to have some kind of an alternative on the board today. So that no action would be a rejection of that first motion would have been basically a no action. I also like to talk about what Tom said because he's absolutely spot on correct. He couldn't have been more correct. The amendments, the alternatives that we have right now do not reflect the SASE model's analysis of the Georgia's Bank area. But unfortunately, that decision was made by the council in June. And at this point, our choice is to live with it and move forward with the amendment or go back and do what's right for Georgia's Bank. But the council has made that decision. And you'd have to reverse that decision right now in order to do that. But I want to thank Tom. That was absolutely perfectly put.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michelle, can you go over again the PDT's response to both the services proposal and to the one that you and the rest of the staff worked on so hard? I apologize for the effort, please.
I can do my best to do that. I haven't written a formal PDT report yet, so whether I'm getting it right or not, I'll try. There were some comments along the lines of, sort of why are we revisiting at this stage, and also some comments along the lines of, what is the council really trying to do on Georgia's Bank in terms of a management strategy? Are we trying to optimize productivity of the scallop resource? Are we trying to do as much as possible? Are you trying to do as much as possible to conserve groundfish stocks? Is there an attempt to do both and have a middle ground? So there was kind of some questions in general about, where is this all going long term? We had some specific discussion at the PDT meeting about the alternative, and there were people that, we had some discussion of the enforcement concerns and the irregularity of the boundaries and wondering if, the existing alternatives or some of our previous areas or maybe the services alternative were better options. We did talk about the distribution of the groundfish. The staff alternative has a slightly different northern boundary that we felt like that could, come in a little bit shallower and still encompass a lot of the groundfish distribution. It wasn't a really, conclusive discussion.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may follow up, given the confusion and uncertainty that the PDT and the ambivalence that the PDT received both of these proposals, I'd like to make a motion to amend, if I may. I believe I can amend a substitution.
Hang on just a second. Mitch? Mitch has given you the green light.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I boned up on Robert's rules last night, so I think I was okay. If I could propose the language that I sent to you earlier, Karen, do you have it? It's labeled Motion 1. The motion to amend reads, to include as an alternative for closed area habitat protections on Georgia's Bank, the northern edge combined area presented to the committee in the Habitat PDT CAP memo dated 1 June 2013 on page 24, and the Georgia's Shoal West area added by the Habitat Committee August 30th, 2011. I understand the oh, need a second. For
yeah, you're not. This isn't a motion to amend. You're substituting a substitute.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. Please guide me on how to add them. I'll add that in addition to what Dr. Pierce proposed.
I mean, you can add you can add it to the motion to substitute, but you can't amend a motion to substitute. So we either going to vote that up or down, or you want to amend Dr. Pierce's motion to substitute.
If I may amend it to also include for analysis.
And that's seconded by Dave. Are you seconding it, Dave? Okay. Discussion. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So now we're talking about adding two alternatives. And I had, you know, a lot of heartburn about adding one because of the timeline. Now we'll add two. I just would request, Mr. Chairman, we had a motion on the board and some discussion, but we didn't hear from the public. And could we have members here from the Scallop AP discussed the original one, and now we have another one. And I think we could just use a little bit of input for the public if we could.
Yeah, thank you, Mary Beth. I've been waiting for things to slow down a little bit here. But specific to the council, to the motion to amend the substitute motion, then we will go to the public. Terry, is your hand up?
Yeah, I'm confused about how much area is there. There's all kinds of lines and boxes, so I'm just confused by the whole thing.
Can you clarify that, Matt?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I haven't had a chance to provide a rationale. Karen, if you wouldn't mind just scrolling down. There are two boxes there, one labeled, one, it looks like one's blue and one's green in this projection. One's labeled the northern edge combined, and I cited its source documentation. And the other one is a green box to the south and west called George's Shoal West. Those are the two areas that I'm proposing to amend Dr. Pierce's substitute with. I'm sorry? To be closed. As a habitat protection area, no mobile bottom tending gear. The rationale for this is that we're concerned about going back to square one. We haven't gone back to square one. These have been developed. These are derived from our SASE analyses. They've been vetted by the PDT. We don't need to go back to square one. These have already been presented to the council. The council have seen these. And it addresses the issues that Tom so astutely put forward, that it puts meaningful an alternative on the books that has meaningful alternatives for protection to flesh out the amendment. And that's, I think, all I need to say.
Before I go to the public, does anyone else from the council want to comment right now? John.
Yeah, I just want to, I think, comment on some of the comments. You know, we had extensive votes and deliberations in June. Some people won, some people lost. And we've sent the council staff off to do this development with the November as the backstop. So I really am troubled at the last minute here, the 11th hour, to start throwing different proposals out there to be analyzed. I think realistically, despite my good colleague, Mr. McKenzie's suggestion that this is already done, I think this will guarantee we don't hit the November deadline for final action. So I'd oppose this amendment to substitute.
Okay, we're going to go Terry, then Tom, then we're going to go out to the public. And John.
So if this goes in, where's the access to 30 million pounds of haddock we're supposed to catch out there next year? I mean, I'm concerned that we're going to end up in a worse shape than we are right now if we take away access to blackbacks, access to haddock, access to scallops. I mean, where's the access? We're supposed to be doing this to help the industry and the environment. And it looks to me like we're shutting off access to everything that's productive. Because believe it or not every place has fish net. We need to work to find the fish. And just because there are open areas around it doesn't mean those places are productive.
Tom.
Thanks. And I absolutely hear Terry's concern. And these areas give me heartburn, too. I mean, those are big areas, no doubt. And there's fish and scallops in them, no doubt. But we're not here at final action picking our preferred alternative or our desired alternative. We're creating a range of alternatives, and I don't think in this area we have a range yet. And we've gone through that process in the inshore Gulf of Maine, and it's brutal. And we have alternatives in there that a lot of people at this table do not support, but they're in there to provide the analysis to help us make final decisions when it's time for that. And you know, I think from a process standpoint, I think Mary Beth raised a process standpoint. If we're going to include alternatives that minimize the area protected, then we have to at the same time at least be open to alternatives that give us an upper bound of what's possible, even if we don't choose it for a lot of the reasons that Terry outlined. Right? I think it's appropriate, excuse me, I think it's inappropriate to say, well, the document's closed, there's no more alternatives that can come in unless they push the document in this direction and not this other direction. So I actually think having this this motion as it's structured with these two alternatives will complete the range out there. I think it's a positive step, even if in the end we don't pick this alternative for the reasons that Terry outlined. So I will be supporting it for those reasons.
John, and then I see other hands up, but we are going to go to the public after John. Thank you, Paul.
Can I ask the Mary Beth question of Michelle? What would this one do to the timeline?
I wish I had a really good answer for you. I mean, these are areas we've looked at in the past. The council saw the larger area on the more towards the northern edge in their June meeting. You know, we've talked a lot about the Georgia Shoal area. You know, it is an additional set of areas to analyze. It's going to require a little more reconfiguring of the document. I mean, it's sort of a marginal additional amount of work that makes it, you know, marginally harder to have a complete document for November. I don't know. You know, Andy and I are, you know, been talking about it, and we're shooting for November. We're hesitant about how far we'll get, and we're going to do our best. So this might be a little more difficult to analyze than, say, the regional office alternative, but it's probably doable. I don't really know what more to say than that.
Who from the audience wants to comment on the motion to amend the substitute? Gibb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. We think that this is a step in the right direction to do, as David Preble said, do the right thing for Georgia's Bank. The Habitat PDT got together in June and looked at the range of alternatives that were in place at that point, and they gave their clearest commentary on the range of alternatives at that point. And it's very similar to the range of alternatives that's available right now. They said that the northern edge juvenile groundfish area and the various Georgia Shoal habitat areas in combination do not meet the objective of improving protection for juvenile groundfish overall as compared to the no-action closed area alternative. That commentary says that the range of alternatives that you have in the document right now, because the range was pared down even more at the June council meeting, you have a deficient range of alternatives right now. It doesn't do the job. It doesn't meet the goals and objectives of the amendment, and you need to bulk it up. The alternative that came through from the regional office took one of the alternatives and made it weaker. A similar thing happened when the council staff, I know it was an innovative approach looking at the biomass of scallops and sculpting something around that, but it still doesn't do the job. And the PDT and the CAT last week, during their meetings, repeatedly during the meetings, they talked about meeting the goals and objectives of the amendment. And their opinion at various times during the meeting is, for a lot of the regions, Georgia's Bank in particular, that the document doesn't meet the goals and objectives. This motion will build in an alternative that will meet those goals and objectives. And this should go forward for analysis you need to have something other than status quo that meets the goals and objectives of the amendment. There was some discussion at the CAT meeting that even status quo won't meet the goals and objectives because one of the goals is to improve habitat protection. So we believe very strongly that this alternative needs to move forward for analysis. And Michelle just gave you the advice it's not going to be that much of an additional workload, and that this is a strong step to improve things on Georgia's Bank. Thanks very much.
Dave Gaethel, welcome back.
Thank you. I spent 9 years as an inmate on the Habitat Committee. That's a life sentence. And I just had some comments relative to the process here today because I'm not happy with the way it's going. I think you need to pare down the number of alternatives, not increase them. You've got way too many already, and you're still adding them. That's number one. Because the public, when you go to public hearing, is going to just throw up their hands and run screaming from the room. Now, I think I understand these alternatives as well as anybody, and even I'm getting baffled at the moment as to the possible combinations here. And because of that, I can almost predict what's going to happen at the public hearings. My crystal ball is remarkably clear on this at the moment. You're going to get 5,000 postcards that say close everything, and you're going to get about 300 comments that say leave everything open. So we're losing the chance to have a meaningful discussion about how we might actually do something to improve things by throwing so many alternatives on the table that everybody is completely baffled. So I would urge you to do two things with this motion. One is split it into two questions and decide whether you want both of them in there or only one of them instead of the two of them together as one motion. The second thing I do is remind you about to the extent practicable. And I think a lot of these have gone well beyond the extent practicable. If you close every place there is in the ocean and you can catch a fish or a scallop, that's not practicable. And so I think it's time for you to really bite the bullet here and start paring this document down, way down, not only on Georgia's Bank, but in the Gulf of Maine and southern New England as well. Let's get back to what we can actually do, and then maybe we can have a meaningful discussion with the public about what the best ways are to achieve that. Thank you.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. To reiterate comments that I made in the past, I think at this point in time, I would be against this motion and any motion to add new alternatives. We appreciate the fact that the regional office thinks that we need some more alternatives because they understand the economic consequences of most of these alternatives that are on the table. However, we think there's a full range. I'm more concerned about the analysis question, and I brought this up time and time again. When you have so many alternatives, we don't have the data to be able to distinguish between these alternatives. I mean, on a broad scale, one of the fundamental questions for analysis would be, have the existing closures improved productivity? Have they done anything to, on a permanent basis in 20 years, that could be measured and analyzed. One thing that can be measured just for this area in the northern edge, this, we know that on a long-term average, it produces 2 million pounds of scallops. Can't locate specifically within these alternatives. So how do you analyze that? We know 2 million pounds of scallops is $20 million ex-vessel, probably $60 million annual economic activity in the economy. We lost in the existing 20 years $400 million of landings. So that we know in a broad sense, but how does one start subdividing it with multiple alternatives? We have enough alternatives to get to that general question. And the other, there's a number of presumptions that the only way you have habitat protection is by closures. Allegedly, through this entire habitat process, we've been assured time and time again over the past decade that closures is not the only tool. There's other ways you get protection. High catch per unit effort. You know, matter of fact, you could probably do an analysis and show that no closures actually provides the most habitat protection. We have habitat management in every framework action in the SCALA plan. We analyze every alternative by swept area. And the SASE model is a perfect tool to utilize to determine and evaluate swept area, comparing one swept area to another. So in adding more alternatives, please keep in mind that you have to analyze them. You have to know how fishing effort gets displaced. You have to understand the economic consequence of the closure and the displaced effort. Do we have the tools to be able to analyze that? Only in the broadest sense, not at the level of alternatives that we have on the table. The issue of vertical epifauna, again, the analysis have shown that the areas that the highest abundance of vertical epifauna are on open bottom. They're not in these closures. The idea that we're protecting rocks. We don't even have large rocks in the northern edge. They're all on the Canadian side of the line. We're talking cobble of, you know, cornmeal size. We're talking, gravel of cornmeal size, cobble of fist size. I've towed most of that area, and you don't even come up with a cobble in the dredge. You have data. You could analyze that. The presumptions that are in the document that you see continuously that this is a cod bottleneck, there's no evidence that this is a cod bottleneck. It's been closed. Most of that area has been closed 20 years. And we have, since it's been closed, we haven't had a successful Georges Bank cod year class. I mean, to me, that would start raising some alarms that maybe something else has occurred because we closed these areas, i.e. displacing effort to areas that are probably more important to cod but probably have less gravel. So I'm just really concerned in how we're going to analyze this. And, I know I could improve the habitat of my farm, the productivity of my fields, without closing my fields permanently. Okay, and what we practice in scallops is rotational fishing. And that's in the Bible. So I just hope that we don't add any more alternatives. We analyze what's on the table now. It's going to be hard enough to do that and get this final action completed so that we could start earning some money.
Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Council. Congratulations, everybody, on their appointments, and look forward to working with you. My name is Peter Hughes. I am the chair of the Sea Scallop Advisory Panel, and I also represent a company by the name of Atlantic Cape Fisheries. The advisory panel took place last week where this lobster claw figure was brought up for some input from the advisors. And there was a lot of discussion at the table about it, and there was a lot of confusion throughout the room. And we actually took a 10 to 15 minute break so that we could discuss it as an entire group to find out what this means. In coming back to the table, it was very evident through comments that were made from the Sea Scallop Advisory Panel that there was not any support for the introduction of this. To echo something that John Quinn just said, that this is an 11th hour edition, and it came from left field, and we don't clearly know what it means, but we didn't feel that it should be introduced the way that it was introduced, without the opportunity to clearly vet the data as an industry. That being said, I, Peter Hughes, as Atlantic Cape Fisheries, in attending the PDT meetings and the AP and committee meetings and looking at the paperwork, it's clear to us that in 2013, surveys show that there's approximately 30 million pounds of biomass in that area. And this is just the northern edge area. This doesn't include the western. That's the alternative that's currently on the board. And I am opposed to that, to practically locking up 30 million pounds of scallops. One other thing that I would like to note is the drawing of the lobster claw. If you were to tow north, west, and south, east, it's by the scale that you have here, it's a 2-mile tow. That's it. That's not a lot of room. I don't know how many fishermen are on this panel, but if there's a 2-mile window and you've got a fleet of 350 boats or 320 boats or 313 boats, and they're all going to tow, you know, east to west, there's a 2-mile track that they can tow in, and that's it. So we as Atlantic Cape Fisheries are opposed to this motion and the previous one also, that it was just the lobster claw. Thank you.
Sally.
Good morning. Sally McGee. I work for the Nature Conservancy, also a former inmate, served with Dave Preble for 9 years. Dave and I would agree on some things and disagree on others. I think one thing that he mentioned that I just want to reiterate is that maybe it would be easier, depending on how your discussion goes, to split these in two so that you can have the discussion on one and then the discussion on the other. As far as the alternative goes, the Nature Conservancy would support this alternative. It follows the scientific advice and technical analysis that the PDT has done. It reflects what the public has been following in terms of the outputs from the LISA and SASE analysis, and is reflected very clearly in the map that's put forward here. In terms of timing, you know, this thing has been on the board for 10 years now. So I would suggest that if people feel like this is something that's worth considering, that another couple of months is worth it to get it right, to get a full range of alternatives in there. I don't think that it's confusing. I think it reflects the scientific analysis that's been done by the PDT, and it follows that peer-reviewed analytical path. So we'd strongly support it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Drew.
Thank you. German Cavis Fisheries Survival Fund. Where to begin? First, I guess the whole genesis of this whole discussion was the agency's concern for scallopers having some practical access to the area. And for that, we appreciate that concern. We also, however, note that throughout this entire time that this concern has been raised and these different issues or areas have been put forward, that at no time has the scallop industry been consulted that could maybe actually help us get to a better place than we are right now. That's a missed opportunity, and that's a shame. Also, another apparent genesis of all of this is the agency's or some concern that there's a proper set of alternatives already in the document. Well, let's be clear. There are currently 5 alternatives in the document as we see today without any resolution of these alternatives. We have no action. We have the what we put into all the areas, the no closures. And then there's the areas, the closure area in the northern edge. And then there's a closure area in the northern edge plus a larger gear modification area. And then there's a large gear modification area and another closure out in Georgia Shoals. So that's what's before us. So there is pretty good different things to choose from. So I would certainly dispute the notion that there isn't actually already a proper range of alternatives. And we certainly have a lot of heartburn about putting anything new in at this time, given that while some may think another 2 months isn't a big deal, for the scallop fishery it's critical. And for a lot of these fisheries it's critical. This has already taken too long. And we need to get this issue resolved so we can start properly managing scallops on Georgia's Bank, and we need to move this forward. And as far as the different alternatives of the claw, as you've heard, is absolutely impracticable. It doesn't work. In fact, I guess this, maybe it's a matter of the scaling or however the data was presented, but the area to the west that it would be closed is actually chalk full of scallops has actually been fished pretty heavily right now in this year, producing some of the best trips anywhere right now and producing great scallops, quality scallops, and that would be lost. And so we would actually end up losing more than we would gain by going through the lobster claw. And the idea of actually trying to fish in there, I mean, because people have to recognize if you're in an access area on a scallop vessel and you cross that line, you don't get to just jump back into the access area. You have to go all the way back into port, which, you know, is one thing from the South Channel. It's a completely different thing from all the way out in the northern edge. You have to go all the way back into port and then come back out again, or else you'll lose your whole trip if you were to just hop back in. And obviously VMS could tell pretty easily if you do. So the current range of alternatives in there is rather robust. And I say that, you know, people are saying, oh, the area's not that big, but I think people are conflating closed area 2 as a mortality closure with the HAPC that's actually the only habitat management area. So we have to be careful that we're comparing apples to apples and not apples to oranges here, because all of closed area 2 is not a management area or a habitat management area. It's only mortality. It's only that small section up to the north that's actually the habitat area. That's what we're talking about, is comparing to anything new. So to say that anything that's being proposed is a dramatic decrease in size or does this or that, that's not accurate, because it's actually quite comparable in size, what's in your set of alternatives, as compared to the actual habitat closure, and that's what we're comparing here. Because closed area 2, in of itself, is not a habitat closure. And then combine that with also the fact that, you know, I've seen and heard the comments of the PET and the CAT, and, you know, I've been a long time observer of those processes, and while those people are doing hard work, I think people that sit on those are forgetting to read the entire law in its entirety rather than just reading the first part that says protect habitat. The second part, which is equal in weight and actually a limiting factor, is to the extent practicable. And that's not a throwaway line that Congress put in there. That's not something we should consider. That is a limiting factor. And I would argue that status quo has completely ignored to the extent practicable, especially with the consideration of the scallop resource, where you have, at times, we've had 30% of the biomass of scallops tied up in these closures. That does not meet any practicable standard that I am aware of. And as far as being able to fish that area, scallopers have shown year after year that we can fish areas responsibly under rotational management. I've heard some concerns about how this area leads to spawning and other things. Fact is, those assertions are not backed up by the science, not backed up by observable data, and not backed up by papers published by Dr. Rago and Dr. Hart out of the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Fact is, since we've closed this area, we have seen no increase in recruitment on Georgia's Bank and scallops. None. That's observed. That's a matter of record. Okay? Georgia's Bank scallop recruitment is a cyclical event. It usually happens about every 10 years. We have a spike, then we have a fallow, and we're coming out. Right now we've had a period of low years, and we're due for a spike, and we think we might be getting that spike, actually, from what we're seeing in the surveys, which is right on schedule with the historic cyclical pattern of recruitment in Georgia's Bank. That's completely independent of closures. Because the fact is, for all these years that we have had closures, we haven't seen any increase in recruitment. So the argument that if we were to open this area up and allow fishing in it would hurt recruitment is not supported in any way, shape, or form by the facts. And the facts are, we've shown that the only real harm to scallops is loss of yield. Because if you don't go in and harvest the scallops, you don't gain any of the yield from allowing those scallops to grow out. I mean, the reason rotational management works is you allow the scallops to grow big, and you maximize the yield per recruit by getting as much poundage as you can in a sustainable manner. If you never go get them, you don't get any of the benefit from the closure, and you don't get any increased recruitment. So we're not achieving optimum yield or doing anything that we're supposed to do under the law by just locking up scallops. So scallop fishery wants to go and have a discussion about the options in front of it that are already in the document. We think it's a perfectly acceptable range of alternatives. You need to remember that the extent practical is an equal part of the law and actually a limiting factor on the habitat protections, and that gets lost in this discussion, and we should move forward as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Okay, I see two hands in the back. I'm sorry I can't see your faces, but those will be the last two public comments. Please come forward, and then we're going to take a 10 or 15-minute break, regroup, and move on the motion to amend the substitute. Hi, Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Cunningham with the Conservation Law Foundation. The discussion about
the number of alternatives, I think, is not relevant, frankly. Yes, there are five alternatives already in the document. One of those blatantly violates the Magnuson-Stevens Act by eliminating EFH altogether in this subregion. Two of them utilize gear modification areas, which a lengthy and deliberative process of science rejected outright. They are not viable alternatives. The remainder are the no-action alternative, leaving everything in place, and alternatives that reduce the current EFH in this subregion from approximately 3,000 nautical miles, over 3,000 nautical miles, to something in the range of 200 nautical miles. So it's a question of quality, not quantity, and compliance, not extent or number. With respect to the quantity of EFH currently protected, the fact of the matter is, in this omnibus habitat amendment, you're faced with 3,200 nautical miles of currently protected EFH in this region. And if the effect of this amendment is to cut that down to 200 nautical miles, or the agency's proposal would cut that 200 in half, is that protecting EFH? Yes, there's a practicability component. That assessment has not yet been done, and that assessment should not be done at this table. That's what the DEIS process is about. You put together a robust, broad, comprehensive range of alternatives, and then you assess them, and you determine what is the ecological function and degree of protection, and how do they rate with respect to impacts on socioeconomics and straight economics. So I would urge you to not engage in that process now. This habitat process has been going on for a long time. And since I've been involved, the suggestion has been that it should continue to take some time because we now have this model. We're using science, and it's rigorous. And the science produced a map that depicts these LISA clusters. And at the time, folks were very quick to say, these LISA clusters are good science. Just look at it. Closed Area 1 and Closed Area 2 don't light up. It proves what we've been saying all along. It's good science. So for purposes of getting rid of Closed Area 1 and 2, it was acceptable. But for purposes of using it for the purpose for which it was actually generated, which is protecting habitat or helping you assess how to protect the habitat, it's now being rejected. This alternative takes into consideration the science. Again, it will go through an analysis, and it may not, at the end of the day, be the most practicable alternative, but it's critical that it be assessed. Last thing I would note is within this domain, within the Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, and southern New England, no area is better sampled, no area is better understood than that grouping of LISA clusters on the northern edge of Georges Bank. So to the extent that you have any questions about whether the science is accurate out there, your science is no better elsewhere than it is in this region, and I'd urge you to follow it. Thank you.
Last hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah Smith with Environmental Defense Fund. I want to agree with what Greg just said in supporting this this alternative, and also highlight a couple of points that Tom Dempsey had made earlier in talking about this. Just in noting that the way that we have looked at Georges Bank compared with some of the other subregions, it seems has been very different. We have a very rigorous scientific process focused on the SASE analysis and focused on the LISA clusters, and we have the council has, for the most part, followed the science and made some good alternatives based both on the SASE analysis and on the hotspot analysis within the rest of the subregions. But it seems that same understanding and acceptance of the science has not extended to the Georges Bank area. It seems that, you know, we really haven't, the council really has not followed that same process, and the alternatives that are currently on the table really do not, are mostly based, it seems, on a discussion of access to scallops. And there, as Tom said, there may be some within the Gulf of Maine, some of the areas that have been voted up as alternatives may not be palatable to many people in council, and they may not be selected as the preferred alternatives. And that's how this process goes. We need something that's on the other end of the spectrum to bound this discussion of alternatives so that there really is a full range of alternatives within this document. And the CAT and PDT have said, as Gib mentioned, that many of back in their earlier analysis that many of the groundfish or many of the Georges Bank alternatives currently on the table do not improve protection for groundfish compared with the status quo, so do not meet the goals and objectives of this amendment. In terms of the timing, if this does extend the timeline slightly on this amendment, I think if the alternatives go out to public comment as they are now and there's not a sufficient range of alternatives, it seems likely the council will have to go back and add in new alternatives anyway if these are found to be not sufficient. So I think extending the timeline at this point, and Michelle said, you know, she may still be able to do this within the November timeline. And then finally, I want to make the point that while the council has mostly discussed the Georges Bank alternatives in terms of, you know, the northern edge area and thinking about how much protection should be on the northern edge area versus providing access to the scallop industry, I also want to highlight that there is a groundfish crisis that extends to Georges Bank. It's not just within the Gulf of Maine. I think the council really needs to think seriously about providing protection for particularly cod and yellowtail flounder, which I know we'll be talking about, hearing about later today and tomorrow. So I think that I would be very much in favor of this amendment to the alternative because it thinks more broadly beyond just this northern edge area and provides some more substantive protection to the Georges Bank region. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break and regroup and come back to the council.
Track mine down. Yeah, it was us, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to call a vote right now. Tom Dempsey. Hey, Frank, we need the Enforcement Committee here to.
Come on.
Okay, we've got most everybody back. We've talked this issue extensively. Does anybody on the council wish to continue? I'm going to go right around the table. Rick, then Terry, and then Sheree, and then we're going to move. Then we're going to move, after you have all made your comments, we're going to move on the motion to amend the substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations. I had one question pursuant to the comments that we heard, and I wanted to follow up on a point that Ron Smolowitz had asked. And so it's a question for Michelle. But, Michelle, in terms of looking forward to what we might anticipate between now and November and then ultimately in the EIS, what sort of analysis might we look forward to that looks at the different trade-offs between
the types and amounts of habitat protected versus some of the conservation benefits for the benefit of juvenile groundfish versus other resources in the area, such as scallop biomass, scallop yields, some of those opportunities as they relate to practicability. What sort of analysis of all these trade-offs do you anticipate as we consider these different options and the scope of options?
So in terms of habitat protection, it's going to look something like providing a context for the amounts and types of different habitats in a subregion and what fraction of that is encompassed in different groupings of areas that are in alternatives, and then what we think the vulnerability of those habitats are in terms of groundfish and other resources, which resources for juveniles in particular for these habitat management areas use these areas at different throughout the year, I guess, cumulatively, which species seem to have a dependence on different types of habitats, an association with different types of habitats, and making an inference about the potential for different combinations of areas to enhance productivity. In terms of sort of costs on and access to other resources, we'll be looking at potential displacement of effort that would occur if an area that's currently open is closed, and we're going to be doing that by looking at a time series of effort and revenues that have come out of different areas, and characterize that basically as a, potential for displacement. Deirdre and I have worked together in terms of some of the analyses specific to scallops, characterizing the biomass in different areas, characterizing the recruitment that has come out of different areas as a long sort of time series, trying to sort of forecast in the relatively short term what kind of scallop abundance is in these different areas, so that kind of thing. Guesses about how fishing effort is actually going to shift if we change the range of management areas that are accessible and inaccessible to fishermen is going to be really difficult. We don't have behavioral modeling that really tells us with any degree of certainty what's going to happen, so we're going to have to sort of make some guesses based on historical patterns of effort and also where people are currently fishing, but some of it's going to be very qualitative.
Thank you.
Tom?
Yeah, I guess I will take the opportunity to just reinforce. I think we've talked a lot about process and how long this process has taken and whether we should sort of eliminate consideration ahead of time of any alternatives that might allow us to fully consider an appropriate range of alternatives throughout the document. And to my way of thinking, I've always believed and I've always been taught that what jobs like this are judged by is the last 10%. We've done 90% of the work. We've spent a tremendous amount of time and made a huge commitment in resources and focus in getting the document to this point. And I just don't see a compelling reason why to rush the last 10% and not analyze a full range of options out on Georges. We've delayed this process a number of times. Nobody's arguing that. But it's also, a potential delay to yield a much improved document, a much improved process and full consideration. I think that makes sense at this point. I'm given confidence by what staff has said in terms of what these alternatives will actually take to analyze, and I'm not convinced that they'll result in significant delay. And if they did and they resulted in a better document and a better process, then that's a trade-off I think I'm willing to make. We will be judged by how well we do the last 10% of this job. I'll support this motion, and I think we should all keep in mind how much time we've already committed to this and how important it is to finish it out right.
Terry.
I'm going to disagree with Tom, of course.
That's why you're sitting next to him.
Yeah, I know. What is up with that? I think we have more than adequate amounts of alternatives in the document already without going this far. In fact, we have an alternative that says all the areas on Georges Banks will be gear modification areas. And I you know, we're just pushing fish to the east, and we're not giving our boats any access to catching the haddock that we're allowed to catch, the yellowtails and the cod out there, and the scallops, of course. But, you know, we need access to that area to split the fleet up and not compact us into little boxes like we have us now. So I think we have more than enough alternatives there, and I'm going to vote against the motion.
Matt? PK?
Yeah, I agree with Terry. I hear what Tom's saying, but this late in the game to add something like this, I just don't see the need for it. I think the other options are, hard enough and have enough time to be, barely have enough time to be vetted as it is. I think this scope is just too big of an area. Thank you.
Vincent?
I'm going to agree with PK and Terry. We have six alternatives, taking 10 years to develop. And now, 2 months before final vote, we're going to put in two more alternatives? That's just crazy as far as I'm concerned.
Ellen?
I had one comment that I think I'd like to reiterate that Doug brought up at the groundfish habitat meeting, and that is that all of these alternatives have been put into sub-regions. The law requires us to look at all the alternatives together in each region to meet the requirements of the law. So even if this sub-region does not have requirements that meet the law, by looking at the entire region, you're going to see a different picture. And I think by doing the assessments in those small sub-regions, the public is going to have a really difficult time looking at the bigger picture, and I'm afraid that the council may also. But I'm not going to support this substitution to the amendment. Thank you.
Mark? John?
Yeah, I'm opposed to this amendment as well. I just wanted to reiterate what I said earlier, that this is really an 11th hour move to put more alternatives in. I think 10 years is an awful long time. One of the criticisms of us as a council is that we kick the can down the road and, you know, let's try that next in 3 months. Let's reanalyze that. And it's, you know, this is a phrase, paralysis by analysis. And I think we've got to make some decisions here today, particularly on this, and to oppose this amendment and put forward the wide breadth of options that are out there already in this document. So I'm going to oppose this amendment. And I'm on, I think I'm going to look for a parole hearing on my role on the Habitat Committee coming in this session.
John, you want?
I'm going to support this amendment, and I'm going to support, is it the amendment that Dr. Pierce put forth of ours? What I'm a little disturbed about is they're being lumped together, and I am disturbed about them because I think they are as different as night and day. And I hear, well, last-minute things, and they're being lumped together, and they're as different as night and day. A good idea submitted at the last minute that doesn't derail the process, that doesn't put us off schedule, is a good idea. And I think it's perfectly reasonable that someone might like one of these amendments and dislike another one. And if they get lumped together, then I think that's really unfortunate. And I'm sorry that this amendment was added, you know, to the first one, because I think they're very, very different. I happen to support both of them because as this has gone through, I've been supportive of a wide range of alternatives. And Michelle said both of these options could be considered without slowing us down. But I've consistently said essentially a wider range of alternatives is worth doing. But I hope we look at these as very different options because I think they are.
You all set, Frank? Mike?
Yes, thank you. I guess I'm not particularly or not supportive of the substitutes or amendments because, and I've heard a lot of argument about them, and so on, positive support, negative support, and I come to the conclusion that we're not at a point in time where there's been due process by which the committee has actually come forward with the alternative to protect additional habitat on the northern edge of Georges Bank. I do support the original motion from the committee, which said we should do more to protect habitat on the northern edge of Georges Bank, or have an alternative that would more broadly protect. So I'm back to to where I think we started with it. It's really a two-part decision. One is, do we do more? Do we have an alternative that addresses the issue of the northern edge as the committee brought it forward in a general sense? And I do support that. But the refinements or substitutions I see is, at this stage, having lots of pros and cons from various people's perspective and not being likely to emerge with any sort of consensus. So I think we should pursue alternatives, but I don't necessarily think we should be selecting these one or two at this time.
Or Beth.
Thank you. I think clearly I don't support the motion to amend. It feels like we're revisiting what we did in June. And while technically this motion to amend is different, I think the spirit of what we did in June, this is revisiting that. We have two alternatives here, neither of which are practical. You know, including them together is problematic. That's two alternatives that could slow the process, whereas one can clearly slow the process. And I really do like that comment, paralysis through analysis. I wrote it down. Got to remember that.
Laura. David. Sherry.
I'm not ready to comment on the amended and substitute yet. However, I would like to ask, has the committee considered what is the impact to the lobster habitat if these areas are opened up? They've been closed for many years. There is a viable industry in there. And will seasonality aspects be considered if there is a habitat conflict with lobsters?
Michelle?
Yeah, this is an issue that has been, the issue of conflict with lobsters has been raised for the committee. I don't think there's ever been a sort of formal comment coming out of the committee about any measures that would mitigate any of those concerns, but it has been discussed. It's also been discussed by the Habitat PDT and the Closed Area Technical Team. What we're going to try and do in the document is, as I understand it, there are two concerns. One is that especially, you know, well, the lobster fishery is seasonal, and obviously the reproduction of the lobsters is also seasonal, and I think the two concerns, as I understand it, are bycatch of lobsters that are egg-bearing and that may have impacts on the lobster population, and we'll try and look at that as best we can in terms of some of the impacts of increasing access in this region in the draft. And then I think the other issue is, you know, which may be a more kind of qualitative discussion, be that there are concerns about gear conflicts between the lobster fishery, and that's obviously a very seasonal fishery, and also any, you know, scallop fishing or groundfish fishing that would happen in this area if aspects of it are reopened. And so we'll try and look at that,
you know, the data about where people have been fishing, where we think that the egg-bearing lobsters are, and make as best as we can an assessment of those issues. So it will be brought to the council's attention in the draft.
Mark?
Thank you. I support this motion to amend. I believe it's incumbent on the council to consider a full range of alternative, particularly an alternative that has as its basis the SASE analysis.
Last word, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, Mark is exactly right. We've had a tendency to conflate productivity with habitat. Mike Sissonwine pointed that out. What we're trying to protect here is habitat. Even though we don't necessarily in all cases know exactly what the link is between productivity, to say that it doesn't exist is like saying that a farmer's soil isn't important to his crops. He may not know the chemistry of the soil, but he damn well knows it's important to his crops. And we're in the same situation scientifically with habitat. We may not know all of the linkages, but we do know they're there. So what we're trying to do and have been trying to do from the beginning is protect habitat, and that's the basis upon which SASE was first developed. From the very beginning, I have stated, right from my first time I ever was at a meeting in the council, that I was very much against continuing closed area 2. Closed area 2, I think that Terry's exactly right. All we've done is to sweep fish over into Canada. And I've been against, I supported even the idea of opening up a strip so our guys could at least interrupt that flow of fish. So what I see right now is that we've opened an area that's already huge. And we had to put habitat and groundfish issues together for a number of very practical reasons, which is why we did it. As far as the timing is concerned for this alternative, this motion is not new. A number of people are saying that this is a new idea or a new alternative. It's not new. There's nothing new about this. A good part of the analysis is already done. If we need a little bit more time, Michelle was quite correctly, she was not secure that we could make November. After 10 years and all that's gone into this, we should be able to have a one-day December meeting if we need it. I'm not offering that as something we do automatically, but if we see that we need it, then we can do this on a one-day meeting in November. We've already got November jammed up with all the stuff that's going to be there anyway. This is not an insoluble problem. After 9, 10, whatever it is, years, we don't have a time problem. We can solve this. Okay, that's it.
Okay.
Now, obviously, I support the motion.
No, we've had a full discussion.
I would just like to request a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to move the questions. We've had a request for a roll call vote. And this is on the motion to amend the substitute.
Please answer for a roll call vote. Answer either aye, nay, or abstain. Mark Alexander?
Aye.
Terry Alexander?
Nay.
Vincent Balzano?
Nay.
Frank Blount?
Aye.
John Bullard?
Aye.
Tom Dempsey?
Aye.
Mark Gibson?
Aye.
Ellen Gaethel?
Nay.
Cherie Patterson?
Nay.
Peter Kendall?
Nay.
Matt McKenzie?
Aye.
David Pierce?
Nay.
David Preble?
Aye.
John Quinn?
Nay.
Laura Ramsden?
Nay.
Mike Sissonwine?
Nay.
Mary Beth Tooley?
Nay.
Okay, the motion fails 7-10-0. We're going directly to the motion to substitute. I'm going to move that question as well. You want another roll call vote? Okay. Those who support the motion to substitute on the board, please indicate so. Is everybody clear what it is?
Yes.
So Karen, can you scroll up? Okay, is everybody clear? PK?
Just a clarification, though. Would this motion eliminate alternative six, the lobster claw? I'm just curious. It would. That's what's replacing that.
Okay, is everybody clear? John?
No. I'm sorry.
Okay. No more clarifications. Okay, to the motion substituted on the board, those who support it, please indicate so. Yeah. Those opposed? Okay, the motion carries 9-8. So we're back to the main motion as substituted. Same sign. Those who support the main motion as substituted, please indicate so. It's on the board.
Oh, you mean the main?
Lobster claw is gone.
This is the Karen Michelle. Can you have Karen show the Nero proposal? It is not the lobster claw.
Sorry, I don't have a separate figure. It's in their letter, but it's this hatched area here. So this is the alternative in the document. This whole area, and then this northern portion of it is the proposal from the regional office. What I would take from this motion is that this would be alternative six that we would analyze would be just the northern portion, and that the staff alternative would not be considered.
Andy, get a clarification.
I'm not sure this was clarified well about the staff discussion and looking at the alternatives and coming up with new ones. The thing that troubled us about the Nero proposal is that it left open some areas of important vulnerable habitat and substrates in the blue area in the south, and didn't allow access to the highest concentrations of scallops up in the purple area to the north. Thank you.
Tom Dempsey, you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I had a question. This doesn't remove any of the alternatives currently in the document. So the full, just to be clear, even if we pass this, the full northern edge box would still be in the document. This would be an additional measure, and there would be no lobster claw involved. This would be a reduced
correct
measure. I just want to think that's important that we all remember that before we cast our vote.
Is everybody clear? Mike?
Just to be clear, this is now replacing the original motion from the committee.
Yes.
The substitute.
Okay, but it does add one more alternative.
No, I understand. But it goes from being a general motion to add another alternative to a specific thing.
Any other questions? Seeing none, those who support the motion, main motion as substituted, please indicate so. Those opposed? Okay. Motion fails, 8-9. So, No, we're back to the main.
No, we're done.
Tom Dempsey.
Yeah, I was the switching vote. The underlying motion didn't make any sense anymore. I think
we started at that point. It didn't make sense as a council motion, so I voted to replace that and actually voted against the motion as replaced. But we couldn't be left with a motion that didn't make sense for the council to vote on because PDT had already done the work. So that was the reason for my vote.
Okay. Well, motion after significant discussion failed. Dave, is there any other business? Dr. Pierce.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, but don't we have the motion from the committee to address? We don't.
That motion was substituted.
But the motion to substitute failed.
As a main motion failed.
Okay, I got you. Thank you.
Is there any other habitat business to come before the council? PK.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I'd like to caveat this. We've been talking for an hour about adding things, and I myself would still like to eliminate a few things to help the workload. Therefore, I'd like to make a motion to eliminate the Bigelow Bight, both large and small areas, from all the Western Gulf of Maine habitat management areas to be analyzed.
Is there a second to PK's motion? Seconded by Mary Beth. And your rationale, PK?
The rationale is just, you know, we've battled over it at a few of the committee meetings. I know it's been a close vote. I know a lot of people want to keep documents in the analysis to be analyzed, but these areas are huge concern. They represent some of the biggest trips, number of trips in those areas. Most of the revenue from inshore Maine and New Hampshire boats are included in these areas. To reference the areas, they are in the draft EIS on page 225, 226. They're huge areas off the coast. And there's an option in there, too, that, you know, one of them will be, they'll be close to possibly all bottom-tending trawling gear, which is most of the shrimp fishery from Maine and New Hampshire, which equates to pretty much 92% of the shrimp industry. The inshore herring boats from Maine and New Hampshire that would close all those areas, and potentially the whiting industry as well. We already have a 12-inch raw copper gear in there. Most of the concern was for juvenile protection area too in the state of New Hampshire. We have plenty of state water that we can't access in those areas. I'm just trying to roll down the thing. Earlier on, Dr. Sissonwein asked about the vulnerability of habitat. Most of the areas in the Bigelow Bight and small is, mud substrate, which, you know, I realize is considered habitat, but it's not that vulnerable. And again, Ellen referenced the goals and objectives. So the whole amendment would be to, have a sufficient range of alternatives. I think in the Western Gulf of Maine area, we have both the Jeffrey's Ledge is still an option with Stellwagen Small. We have a Stellwagen Large that's an option. So there are plenty of options to be analyzed. So I think this will help lighten the load a little bit. Thank you.
Okay, Mary Beth, and then given the length of discussion we had on the previous motions, I'm going to limit to a number in support and a number opposed. But Mary Beth, and then Tom.
So I'll be very brief. I think we should analyze alternatives in the document that are practicable, and these clearly are not. They would really do away with a large portion of the small boat fleet, and I don't think we need them in the document at this time.
Just a couple points here. The first is that I'm not sure Pete got all the restrictions right. I believe that these areas would not prohibit midwater trawling. Michelle's shaking her head yes, so these Bigelow Bight areas would not exclude midwater trawls.
The other question is one I think that is worth note is, Michelle, have you guys actually done the practicability analysis yet for any of these areas?
No.
So I guess my point is that we really don't know which of these options are practicable or not yet.
Those who want to speak in support of the motion. Vincent.
I support the motion on the table. I voted against these areas to be analyzed in June. I'll vote in favor of this motion now. When we talk about practicability, what this will do is eliminate the inshore fleet of Maine, New Hampshire, and potentially some of the folks in northern Massachusetts. And that's just not practicable as far as I'm concerned. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And those opposed? Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand PK's desire for this, and it's something I actually sympathize with and in the end may agree with. But right now, those areas exist for a reason. Our scientific analysis put forward those areas that should be analyzed. I agree with Mary Beth Tooley. We should put them forward for analysis. I also believe that we would be acting preemptively without a practicability analysis in front of us. So I'll be opposing this for this time.
Other council members in support? Terry.
Yeah, I supported eliminating the Bigelow Bite area since the first time I saw it. We have that's a huge portion of the revenue of the state of Maine. And, I mean, basically it's where our fleet, our 50, 60-foot boats and under fish all the time. And we're already down to 70 boats a year for the year in the state of Maine. And, you know, we can't go much lower. So I'm going to agree with this motion.
Opposed? Tom?
I'm going to have to oppose this. I mean, in terms of rehashing things we discussed and put to bed in June, I mean, I don't like this alternative any more than anybody else. And there are a lot of other alternatives I don't like in this document. But I think, you know, we're either rehashing all of those conversations and all those decisions or not. I really don't think we want to get to that point. And I get it. I mean, this is a comprehensive option that includes a tremendous amount of area and has incredible impacts on the fisheries. I don't see that this is where we're going to end up. But I also don't want to open up this document and this discussion to pulling out everything that's not our preferred alternative right now. And we had that conversation. We've gone through several cycles with the agency in terms of what is appropriate as a range of alternatives. I just don't want to go through another one of those cycles. So I understand the reason. I understand why people are motivated to get rid of this area. I just don't think we want to go back to the conversation that we had in June. So that's why I won't be supporting the motion, but I understand where it's coming from.
Okay, one more round up from the council in support. You in support, John?
No.
In opposition, John. Then we're going to the audience.
I thought we had a full range of options until somehow we went from 9 to 8 in favor until to 8 to 9 on the northern edge. But I know in June there was an effort to essentially take the habitat amendment and not make it a habitat amendment, turn it into something that didn't meet any of the goals and objectives. And I know that there'll be another attempt to do that. Maybe that's going to start again this morning. I don't know. But I think if it is, I think the audience should weigh in. And let's spend the next couple of days having this argument that we've had in June and we've had since then. Let's let everyone weigh in again on this. We've taken 9 years. People feel very strongly about it. And, you know, if people want to start taking these options out one at a time, let's let everyone comment on it again, because that's what they're going to do. And so we've got a full suite of alternatives. If people want to start taking them out one at a time, let's let people comment on them, because they will and they should comment on them.
How many folks in the audience would like to comment? Okay. Dave, I think I know how you're going to comment.
Actually, you might be surprised, because now I'm representing myself and not everybody in the world. David Gaitel, Fishing Vessel Ellen Diane, I support the motion. I'll reference the document that was provided for us on June 10th. I think your analysis has already been done. In that document, bottom trawl trips, Bigelow Bite, 3,574 trips worth $2,231,000 and change. There's only one area in all the other areas in all the regions that even approaches this, and that's the Georges Bank Lodge in terms of loss of revenue. The difference here is that even if you did that on Georges Bank, those are large boats that are mobile. They can probably go somewhere else. They're going to be very unhappy, and I don't blame them, but they can go somewhere else. I have no place else to go. You close Bigelow Bite, there's nothing left for me. There's no place to fish. So it doesn't pass the extent practicable test. It doesn't pass the economic test. It doesn't pass any of the tests that we've set forward for this amendment. And I don't understand why we're going to go out to public hearing with things that we know don't pass any of these tests. It confounds the public, and I've said it from day one when I was on the council. I wanted a finite number of alternatives that we might actually do, not an infinite number of alternatives that we aren't going to do. It flat out isn't going to work. So why do we persist in doing this? Why do we continue as a group to shoot ourselves in the foot, or some might argue quite a bit higher, maybe the groin, by going to the public with so many alternatives that they can't possibly comment intelligently? So I would urge you to not only zero this one out, but to take a good hard look at this document today, even if it means extending the meeting some, and decide which ones of these you think you're actually going to do. And take those to the public so that you can have a meaningful dialogue with the public about how the boundaries of those areas can be modified to fit what's good for the fish and the fishermen. And absent that, like I said at my earlier comment about Georges, even though I don't fish there, I could tell you what the comments are going to be. 5,000 postcards that say close everything and 300 comments from people who go, I can't understand this, but if I have to make a comment on it, it's open everything. And you know, so I could save the council a lot of money on having public hearings by telling you what the outcome is going to be the way this document's structured right now. Thank you.
Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Cunningham of the Conservation Law Foundation. This is one more effort to eviscerate this amendment, to take whatever substance came out of the science out of it. You are cutting away what little the data supports, and you're going to leave behind status quo alternatives and something substantially less than status quo. If not for NEPA and legal requirements only, I would urge that you vote against this. Whether, again, the practicability analysis has not been undertaken, and comments at the mic do not amount to practicability analyses. Please let the science and the data govern the amendment. Thank you.
In favor? Opposed? Back to the council. Those in favor? No. We're not voting yet. who wants to speak in favor of it? Anyone? Does anyone else in the council want to speak in opposition to it? Okay. Now it's time. to the motion on the board, are those who support it, please indicate so. And those who are opposed? The motion fails. 7 to 10. Is there any other business to come before the council from the Habitat Committee?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are completed with our report.
Michelle, could you just briefly cap your timeline between now and the November meeting so the council's aware of what the PDT and the CAP is going to be doing?
Writing the EIS. That's pretty much all I will be doing for the next 6 weeks. Yeah.
We're going to be counting on you. Piece of cake, right? All right. Tom Warren?
No, we have a replacement, Diane Stefan.
Diane? Yeah. Thank you, Michelle.